WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Joseph Conrad's novel, Heart of Darkness, has been read and dissected in English classes for many decades. It's a rich and complex story about colonialism in Africa and about the dark corners of the human psyche. Journalist Adam Hochschild has written a piece in a recent edition of The New Yorker in which he reminds readers and scholars that while Conrad's story is fiction, it's most likely based on real events and real people in a region that at the turn of the century was called the Congo, now Zaire. Conrad had visited and had traveled the Congo in 1890. Heart of Darkness involves a young man named Marlowe who journeys up the Congo River in search of an older man named Kurtz, whose brutal reputation is well known. Marlowe has been hired to bring Kurtz out of the jungle. As he approaches Kurtz's compound, he sees odd-looking spikes, which later turn out to be human heads impaled on sticks. Adam Hochschild explains what Marlowe first thought he saw.
He's first seen what he thought were ornamental knobs on top of fence posts in front of Kurtz's house. And then a little bit later, he takes a closer look through his binoculars and writes, this is Marlowe, the narrator, writes, "These round knobs were not ornamental, but symbolic. They were expressive and puzzling, striking and disturbing, food for thought and also for the vultures, if there had been any looking down from the sky. But at all event, for such ants as were industrious enough to ascend the pole, they would have been even more impressive, these heads on the stakes, if their faces had not been turned to the house. Only one, the first I had made out, was facing my way. I was not so shocked as you may think. The start back I had given was really nothing but a movement of surprise. I had expected to see a knob of wood there, you know. I returned deliberately to the first I had seen, and there it was, black, dried, sunken, with closed eyelids, a head that seemed to sleep at the top of that pole, and, with the shrunken dry lips showing a narrow white line of teeth, was smiling, too, smiling continuously at some endless and jocose dream of that eternal slumber."
It's such a disturbing, even evil image.
Definitely, definitely. And it's one that we remember very well, not just as readers, but when Francis Ford Coppola moved Heart of Darkness to the movie screen and to Vietnam for Apocalypse Now, he included some human skulls there as well.
Well, your piece in the New Yorker takes this particular scene from the novel and pieces together some history of men from Europe who had come to Africa, I guess, looking for adventure, looking for fortune. And let's talk about some of them. One of them was a man named Guillaume van Kerkhoven. Can you describe for us how he ended up in the Congo?
Well, at that time, the Congo, as I said, was a private colony. It was not a Belgian colony. It later became the Belgian Congo. But at that time, it was the world's only privately owned colony. It belonged to King Leopold II of Belgium, who was a very a greedy and ambitious man who wanted a colony of his own when his countrymen and women were not particularly interested in having one. And he went out and hired the explorer Henry Morton Stanley, who staked his claim for him, and he got all the major nations of the world to approve this as belonging to him in order to subdue the place and to harvest its riches, which at the time that Conrad was there were mainly ivory. King Leopold set up a private army called the Force Publique, the officers of this private army were largely Belgian, but they came from many other European countries as well, and a few from the United States. One of the best known of them was this guy named Guillaume van Kerkhoven, who was a Belgian, very notorious as an aggressive and brutal commander, a hot-headed type. He got into a duel with somebody at one point. Someone else has left an account of how he once saw van Kerkhoven order 125 prisoners of war shot to death. And I think that van Kerkhoven was one of the models that Conrad had in mind for this reason. We don't know if Conrad ever met van Kerkhoven, but I'm certain that Conrad would have heard of him there because van Kerkhoven and some of his soldiers had actually traveled on the same steamboat that Conrad was on some months before. He was probably one of the two or three best-known military officers in the territory.
How do you think Heart of Darkness helps us understand what's going on in Zaire today?
Well, I think that I'd have to take a step back and say that I'm not sure Heart of Darkness tells us a huge amount about what's going on in Zaire, because Heart of Darkness is so much about European characters. There are, in fact, virtually no African characters in the book, which is a criticism that's often made of it, and I think a justifiable one. But I do think that there's a great deal about the history of that time in general, which tells us a lot about what's happening in Zaire today. For example, one of the things that, one has seen a great deal of in the press in recent months is about how Mobutu Sese Seko, the dictator of Zaire, who now happily seems to be on his way out, has milked that country dry over the last 30 years. He's got a private fortune estimated $4 to $5 billion that's stashed abroad. He's got palatial homes, all over Europe, this big mansion on the French Riviera where he spent a lot of time in recent months, has a stake in virtually every major private business operating in the territory, named one of the big African lakes after himself. Every single thing that I just said about Mobutu, without exception, can be said about King Leopold II, another man who roughly 100 years ago also was the dictator of that territory. Leopold also had a stake in every private business operating in the territory. He also named one of the big African lakes after himself. He also amassed a huge fortune, all of it brought back to Europe, and he spent much of his time on the French Riviera in a grand mansion that was only about a dozen miles away from Mobutu's.
Well, I'm thinking about the story that Joseph Conrad tells and a story that has certainly placed in Zaire, and often the way that the West, I think, talks about Africa as if it's a continent always facing disaster, always facing famine, always on the brink of some kind of civil war. Do you think that's a fair portrait of Africa? I know you've traveled there a lot and you've written about various countries there.
Well, I think we have to remember that our relationship to Africa as Americans and particularly as Europeans has been, historically speaking, basically one of plunder. There was the what's usually called the scramble for Africa, the period between about 1880 and 1905, 1910. In which the European countries got themselves colonies in Africa. It's really quite amazing. If you look at a map of Africa around 1880 or so, 80% of it was under indigenous rulers. By 1910, there were only two tiny portions, Ethiopia and Liberia, that were not European colonies of one sort or another. So in the space of about, 30 years, the European countries basically divided up this country between them. And they were interested not really in spreading Christianity and civilization, although there were some missionaries who went there and so on. They were interested in natural resources, in gold, diamonds, ivory, rubber, copper, all sorts of things like that. And they got them, and they got them in huge quantities. And in most parts of the continent, in one degree or another, they put people to work as forced labor gathering them. And, as the colonial era went on, coming to an end around 1955-60, some elements of the system got better, moderated somewhat. Forced labor was pretty much gone from most colonies by the 1940s, 1950s. But it still was a sort of system of plunder. And since then, we've been sort of surprised that Africa's had so many troubles, but I'm not sure, given that heritage, that we should be surprised.
Adam Hochschild is our guest today on Fresh Air. We're talking about an article he had in the April 14th edition of The New Yorker, and it's called Mr. Kurtz, I presume, and it's a look at Heart of Darkness and a look at Zaire's history. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Adam Hochschild. His recent New Yorker article is about the Congo, now known as Zaire, and how it's the setting for the Joseph Conrad novel, Heart of Darkness. If you read this novel differently and you take away the Jungian and the Marxist interpretations and all the other interpretations that have been put on this story, and you read it as a story that's based on true events and real characters, how does this become a different story, do you think?
Well, I think it becomes a different story, first of all, because you remember that it was set in Africa, in a specific country, at a specific time. There are all sorts of things you interpret differently. For example, at the beginning of the novel, when Marlowe, the narrator, begins his walk from the coast to the inland river port where he's going to pick up his steamboat, he notices a group of people who are Africans who have crawled away to die under some trees. Critics write about this as the Grove of Death. Mm. And, you know, they make analogies to Greek myths and are there groves of death in Greek plays and so on, which perhaps there are. But we also know something very specific, which is that the ship that Conrad sailed from Europe to the Congo on carried the first ties for a railroad that King Leopold II, the Congo's ruler, was beginning to build around these great rapids that Conrad had to walk around. This was one of the most murderous railroad construction projects in history. Many thousands of workers died during the course of it. They were worked to death. Cars carrying dynamite blew up and killed everybody within range. It was an extremely murderous construction project. Local oral tradition in the area says that every tie of the railroad track represents one African death and every telephone pole one European death. Well, these people that Conrad saw and wrote about in Heart of Darkness going under the trees to die, these were dying railroad workers. Farther on, as Marlowe, the narrator, continues his walk into the interior, he sees the dead bodies of exhausted porters beside the trail. He sees a body that might have been shot. And we know, if we read the history of that period, that in that very region around the rapids, there were enormous uprisings that were taking place beginning to take place at the time that Conrad was there because people were resisting being conscripted as slave labor, essentially. So all sorts of things begin to look different to us. And then when we meet somebody like Kurtz in the novel, carving out this bizarre little kingdom of his beside the river with an African concubine and, you know, chiefs who crawl before him, and the villagers who do his bidding and so on, we can also begin to find accounts of other people who lived somewhat like that, white men who took advantage of the enormous power that their arms gave them in Africa.
But if we think of this purely as fiction or purely as Joseph Conrad's vivid imagination, are we, and I guess I mean by that the West, those countries that came into Africa, are we getting ourselves off the hook?
I think we are a little bit. Here's the analogy I would make. This is a book, as I say, very much about a particular time and place. But suppose that, when it's been brought to the movie screen, for example, the first time it was filmed, the story was moved to Spain after the Civil War, and it was called Heart of the Forest. The second time it was filmed, Francis Ford Coppola moved the story to Vietnam and called it Apocalypse Now. Made a very interesting movie, yeah. But Africa had dropped out. Only the third time it was brought to the screen in a very little-noticed cable TV movie in 1994 was it set in Africa. And we would think it very weird if someone made a film, for example, of Elie Wiesel's autobiographical Night, which is about Auschwitz, but didn't set it at Auschwitz. And we'd think it's strange if somebody made a movie of Arthur Kessler's Darkness at Noon, but didn't set it in Moscow during the Purge trials where it took place. Although there again, the country is not named in the novel, but everybody knows that it's about Moscow during the Purge trials. So I think there is a kind of evasion. Americans and Europeans don't really want to come to terms with the fact that some pretty awful things happened in Africa during that period of conquest, and that particularly this very somber figure of Kurtz, who's really probably the most famous literary villain of the 20th century.
How would you like people to read Heart of Darkness if there are these important histories?
Well, I'd like them to read it with the historical context in mind. To think of this not only as a book which says something about humanity universally, about the darkness of some sort that exists in the hearts of us all, which it does, and I think the book does speak about that, but as also being a record of some things that happened in a particular time and place. And to remember that and to not forget it. It's like asking someone to, if they're reading a novel about the Holocaust, to remember that the Jews really were killed by the Nazis. Mm-hmm. This is not just a novel that you're reading. You know, in a way, it's a peculiarly difficult thing to do in reading Heart of Darkness, to think about this way, think about the book this way, because one of the paradoxical things about this book is that what may be the greatest anti-imperialist novel in all literature was written by somebody who was an ardent imperialist, and moreover, who had very traditional Victorian racist attitudes about Africans, who are talked about very contemptuously in the novel. None of them qualify to say more than a few words, not even words, mostly grunts. None of them are characters. Right. Conrad was very much a man of his time and place in his racial attitudes. And he also paradoxically thought that imperialism, at least when it was British imperialism, was a good thing. And at the time that he was writing Heart of Darkness, he was an investor in a gold mine in South Africa. But despite all that, I really do feel that the portrait of whites given in this book is one of the truest and most accurate such portraits from the colonial period. The Congo at that time attracted a very hard-bitten sort of man from Europe and in some cases from the United States to work there. It was like a gold rush. It was like the French Foreign Legion. It was really the two things combined. It was a place to get rich quick, gathering ivory. It was also a place to enjoy some combat against a poorly armed foe, to combine the two things. And the type of adventurers who were attracted there then were a pretty unsavory type, and they're summed up in the character of Kurtz, whom I believe is modeled very closely on a number of people Conrad met or heard about while there.
Well, thank you very much, Adam Hochschild, for joining us today on Fresh Air.
Thanks very much.
Adam Hochschild is a journalist, and his article on Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness is in the April 14th edition of The New Yorker. He has a new book out later this spring, and it's called Finding the Trap Door: Essays, Portraits, Travel.